You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Hola, and welcome to our weekly podcast. I'm Sarah Perks, the Program and Engagement Director here at Corner House. Coming up in this sun-soaked Spanish special edition, we review our Oscar predictions and discuss the winners from last Sunday. Viva, our Spanish and Latin American Film Festival, kicks off tomorrow, so my esteemed panel are going to give us their highlights and a bit of background on the festival. And that's not forgetting our humble What's On guide and the staff recommendation of the week. Right, today I'm joined by our very regular contributor and reader no less at the University of Salford, Mr. Andy Willis, our faithful programme manager, Rachel Hayward, and the leader of the collaboration that is the Viva Film Festival, and freelance filmmaker Esther Lisk-Carew. Despite there being a lot going on in the world news at the moment, you can't fail to have heard about or caught some of the Oscars that were on last Sunday. It's the 83rd Annual Academy Awards. And how close were all your predictions this year? Andy, we did a little prediction, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago. How successful were we?
Well, I think we were quite successful, only in that the blandness of the Oscars came to the fore and we predicted that they all would be pretty much as expected. And I think for the most part they were.
Yeah, we said what we would like to have seen and then we predicted pretty much what actually happened. I think the best film, I didn't think The King's Speech was going to win. I thought something like Inception might come in, but I guess that was just maybe a bit optimistic. The King's Speech, still a great, fantastic film, but I guess reflects more the demographic and the age of the Academy voters. Esther, your predictions were quite close as well. What did you think?
With The King's Speech, I had predicted that that one was going to win because of the sheer number of nominations it had. It was the one with the most nominees and by a couple of films, so I thought that one was a shoo-in.
Oh, I thought you said that Toy Story 3 was going to win.
I really wanted Toy Story 3 to win. I would have been so proud if the Academy had broken out of its staid kind of predictability. But unfortunately, they did not acknowledge what was actually the best film of the year.
And it was hosted rather unusually this year by James Franco, someone who's been in a lot of our films recently, 127 Hours, and this week's Howl, and also the actress Anne Hathaway. How did that work? What did you think, Esther, of the hosts?
Well, they were very clearly picked because they were young and hip, except that they started talking about how young and hip they were. I was actually following it on Twitter at the same time, and I'd started following James Franco at the beginning of the night, and he was actually tweeting through the whole thing, which I did think was a little bit odd, and I think kind of showed that he wasn't really there to be a presenter. He was more about what he was doing on the side.
What was interesting for me was how afterwards loads of people were saying that they got most excited when Billy Crystal appeared to present one of the awards and how he would be, of course, a safe pair of hands. So I wouldn't be surprised if next year they're back to some, you know, establishment type comedian doing what they do every year. I think they tried something a bit different, but I think maybe they'll go back to things next year.
And I think it is telling that that segment also had Bob Hope in it, who did it for so long and is so old. It really does show the Academy really is about kind of the older industry figures and isn't really as young as and hip as it wants to be.
In fact, what's happening is now it's all gone and all the hype's over, we can all sit back and say, actually, the Academy, the things they nominate, isn't really what we're interested in terms of films. The sorts of things that win are usually pretty safe bet. I can't agree with Sarah. The King's Speech is not a good film. even if people liked it, it's not a great film. And this time next year, we'll all be getting, oh, is it a good film they've nominated? But it won't be. It'll be the same old pap that they always nominate.
Okay, well, there's a couple of categories that I'm more interested in, the documentary. So Inside Job 1, which we've just shown for the last couple of weeks, and I really did enjoy. I think it was, in terms of being put together, it was a fantastic documentary, very, very cinematic. And also the foreign language category is always of interest to us and the hope that it shines a light, if you like, on some of the lesser-known films. This year's winner was called In a Better World from Denmark. Rachel, what do you know about this film?
At the moment, Sarah, very little. In all honesty, the film hasn't had a UK release. It should be out for release later on in the year, and it's very likely that the film and the film's distributors will use this success at the Oscars as a tool for promoting the film later on in the year.
So the Oscars were a little bit mundane and predictable. Were there any surprises? Esther, did anything surprise you?
Well, given the amount of nominations that True Grit had, I was really surprised that it didn't get anything, especially cinematography. I was really holding out a hope that Roger Deakins was going to win. He's been nominated, I think, 9 times now without being successful, and he's amazing. He always does the Coen Brothers films, and True Grit looked beautiful. So I was kind of disappointed that it lost out to Inception on that one.
Well, the thing that surprised me was when Melissa Leo won Best Supporting Actress for The Fighter, because a lot of the talk beforehand was that she would be overlooked because she'd paid for her own For Your Consideration photos that were in the trade press. I don't know if anyone's seen it. It's worth looking it up online. Her in a big fur coat standing next to this palatial swimming pool. And it just looked kind of, I felt, a bit crazy to be putting yourself forward and paying for it yourself. But again, as Sarah often says, what the heck do I know? Because obviously she did win.
I was surprised that Christian Bale, who won for actor in a supporting role for The Fighter, remembered he's British and had a British accent, because before now he's accepted awards in other accents.
And of course, what's interesting with Christian Bale, again, the same programme I was listening to on the radio said, after his crazy rant when he did the Terminator film about technicians and all that, there was a feeling that none of the technicians would vote for him because of that. Again, maybe they did, going against what the general consensus was.
The big upset of the night was actually Tom Hooper winning the Best Director, because very, very few people had expected him to win that for The King's Speech. Most people, I think, thought that David Fincher would finally be rewarded. So a lot of people on Twitter at the time were just completely, completely shocked. I wanted Darren Aronofsky to win, but I never thought he was in with a chance of it. But now I'm just disappointed that they went wrong and they went with Tom Hooper just because of the wave of The King's Speech.
And also something I'm really happy about was the amazing number of British winners. So we had Colin Firth, Christian Bale, obviously the producers and directors of films like The King's Speech. Is British film having a moment? Is this something to get excited about? Andy?
If everyone in this moment always goes back to Colin Welland when Chariots of Fire won, the British are coming, the British are coming, and the British kind of stumble over maybe one or two films every other year. I think having a film that does well at the Oscars, that, I mean, let's face it, The King's Speech has done phenomenally well globally at the box office, much more than anyone thought it would do. But I don't think that is a kind of, you know, new summer of British cinema. I think the people making films are still struggling away, trying to get funding. It won't mean that there's much more money for people. And I think the battle for the British film industry will continue as it always has. And I think often these films are held up as a new dawn, but really they're just a bit of a one-off, I think.
Esther, British film?
It's very telling that in his speech, I think it was Tom Hooper mentioned that he did a shout-out to the UK Film Council, and that's in disarray at the moment. I mean, we don't really know how going forward the funding is going to work in terms of British cinema. So it's trying to be optimistic because we have had a really successful year, but I think there is a period of caution in British film at the moment as well, because we don't really know where funding's going.
I completely agree with Andy. However, from when we were in Berlin just recently, we did see that two of our highlights across the board for the people who went were British films, so Submarine and Tyrannosaur. So the future's brighter maybe than Andy thinks.
Okay, and also ignoring Grumpy Andy on The King's Speech, I do recommend you watch it. If you've missed it, we're going to show it again from tomorrow. That's Friday, the 4th of March, here at Corner House. All the times are on our website, and booking online does not cost you any more.
Art, film, books, food, drink. All at Corner House, Manchester.
On to our What's On Guide for this week. I'm just going to flag up a few other things going on this week and things that you need to know about. Now, you young creative stars and entrepreneurs of the future, so that's if you're between 14 and 19, you probably remember us talking about this before, but what I want to say is this is your last chance to get your Creative Stars applications in. So if you know someone that's got really good artistic potential across a variety of forms, so it might be visual art, film, theatre, music, something like that, then have a look on our website and get your application in quickly, please. The deadline is the 11th of March. And go to www.cornerhouse.org/livewire. Now, also something I've mentioned before, but I'm going to tell you again, Alf Wren is coming on Thursday the 10th of March, and you do need to put your tickets in advance for our favourite Finnish, that's from Finland, provocateur. Today I was reading a paper that he wrote on innovation, and I got this quote to think about. Everything works some of the time, nothing works all of the time. Perhaps a bit like this podcast. Okay, now all of our faces are now staring nonchalantly from the bar wall. So this is the exhibition that's to do with the Consulate of Corner House. And if you can name all of us in order, then I promise to give you a year's membership to Corner House. So put that on an email straight to me. The Consulate of Corner House, remember, is at the Triangle Shopping Centre. It's open until Sunday the 6th of March, and the faces stay put on the wall of our bar until Sunday the 13th of March.
You're listening to the Corner House podcast, available from www.cornerhouse.org.
Viva Spanish and Latin American Film Festival is in its 17th edition. It's almost an adult. It's that unruly teenager that you can't quite get to come home on time. The festival isn't just about films, of course. There's plenty of events and also an exciting new exhibition in Gallery One. Now, Andy, to get us going, is this going to be a vintage year for Viva?
Well, when we were getting the programme together for Viva, I was kind of slightly concerned that it wouldn't be. But I think Rachel and the team have managed to pull together in time of crisis, really, when, you know, lots of film industries around the world, including Spain, are struggling to get money for features. As I say, Rachel and the team have managed to pull together a really, what I find quite an interesting and exciting festival. One of the things I would draw out in terms of that is the fact that there's a Cine on Construction strand of new films that have been specifically supported to develop filmmaking in Latin America. And some of those, such as The Mugger, are really, really exciting films. And that's one definitely to look out for. With this Cine on Construction strand, if you buy a ticket for one of the films, you can get another one free. Bog off.
Okay, now I'm going to ask each of you to pick two film highlights and tell us about them. So I'll start with Esther.
Well, I'm going to pick a period drama and a comedy. Arráncame la Vida is a really sumptuous period piece. In the past at Viva, there was a film called The Anarchist's Wife, and this film's kind of the alternative, the wife of a really strong political figure who's a little bit dodgy, a little bit corrupt, and you really feel for this woman who's trying to struggle with her own sense of identity whilst being married to this crazy despot and trying to find some happiness in her life. It's a really, really enjoyable film. The period touches are beautiful. It's just gorgeous to look at. And you really root for her to find her own way and find her way out of this seemingly impossible situation. So that would be my first choice. And my second choice for the festival would be Gordos. It's a comedy called Fat People, and it's by Daniel Sanchez Arévalo, who in previous Viva Festival had had a film called Dark Blue, Almost Black, which I really enjoyed. So when I came to watch this one, I was expecting something along a similar vein, but this is a lot lighter. It's about five different people who go to therapy for their eating issues, and you also get to see their lives outside of the therapy session, so how their eating affects their relationships and their work lives. And it's really, really enjoyable. It's just a really nice way to spend a couple of hours getting this window into some really strange and crazy people. So I definitely recommend seeing that one.
Okay, Rachel, you've seen pretty much all of the films, so pick two highlights.
I completely agree with Esther about Gordos. It was a box office hit in Spain when it was released, and so far it's the biggest selling film of the festival. So for my highlights, I've actually struggled to hone it down to two. So I have three, so I'll run through briefly my highlights. My personal documentary hit of the festival is a Colombian film called Sins of My Father. And this is a film made about Pablo Escobar's son. So Pablo Escobar, the notorious drug lord who was assassinated in Colombia. But before he was killed, he ordered the assassinations of many of his political opponents and his drug opponents as well. And the film focuses on his son, who returns to Colombia from exile in Latin America, where he's changed his name, and he returns to Colombia. It's a very, very emotional journey. And he meets the sons of people that his father had assassinated. So as you can imagine, that when these young men, who are only a few years older than me, so barely in their 20s, when they meet, it's a very, very emotional time. And the film is very forward-looking. It looks to social reconciliation, political reconciliation, and I very much recommend it. My second highlight is one of our fiction features, and this is one of a number of films which has young people, children as main characters, and this is a film called The Last Summer of La Boita. This is a very sensitive, beautiful film which depicts the problems, the trials of growing up, going through puberty for a young girl, and then also her friend who's got much more complicated problems than she has. And it's a really interesting film which looks at gender, construction of identity, and the relationship between biology and the nature-nurture argument, really. And my third recommendation, because I can't stick to two, is a Basque film called 80 Days. And this is a film which depicts the growing friendship and how this develops between two women who meet again in a hospital and realise that they went to school together and they had quite a close friendship as teenagers, and their friendship develops and blossoms into something further when they meet again. Not only is 80 Days one of my top films of the festival, but we've also got a Q&A from one of the co-directors here at Corner House on the 19th of March.
Okay, Andy, what are your two film picks?
Well, picking up from Rachel's comment about films with young children in them, my first pick would be Colours of the Mountain, a Colombian film, which is set in the rural area of the country where the civil war or near civil war is going on, with guerrillas, with paramilitaries, with all sorts of fighting going on. And it's about a group of kids who are led by this lad who's just really interested in playing football all the time. And it's how all of that fighting actually prevents them being able to play a really important football match. I won't say much more about it, but it's got some fabulous performances by the young kids in it. So that would be my first recommendation. And my second recommendation, following on from when we went to Berlin the other week, I'm really excited to be able to say that Listening to the Judge, which was one of my highlights of Berlin this year, the team have been able to get straight away almost, and that's going to be playing at this year's Viva. Again, those people who didn't hear what I said then, it's about Balthazar goes on, the controversial Spanish judge. It's a straight interview with him, but it raises some really interesting issues about justice, some really important issues, I think, about the pact to forget that people went through in Spain, not bringing any of the Francoists to justice for the atrocities that they committed, and whether or not that should be changed. And I'm pleased to say that because it raises so many issues, after the screening at 8 o'clock on the 9th of March, I'll be chairing a discussion. So if anyone comes to that film and has got anything that they agree or don't agree with Judge Garçon about what he thinks about those things, then please feel free to come along and have your say about justice, Spanish justice, international justice, all kinds of justice, which his opinions will certainly raise issues about.
And I'd like to flag up a film called Under the Bridge. And what's interesting about this, it's made by a local documentary feature maker, Mike Todd, and it's all about Chicano Park in San Diego. So it's a little bit different, as in it's not actually set in Latin America or Spain, but it's very much about a Hispanic community. And it's one of America's oldest Mexican communities. It's also about the role of artists, and particularly street artists, within this community. There'll be a Q&A with artist Guillermo Arianda and the director, Mike Todd, who I've said is locally based and really, really interesting. And it's also a great link because some of the artists featured in this were actually in an exhibition here. If you can cast your minds back to 1993, for some of us that meant school. But this exhibition was called Sin Frontiera, Chicano Art from the Border States of the US. So maybe that's something that you kind of remember and want to catch up with again. Now, I know the panel haven't actually seen everything, so tell me about something that you're really looking forward to, an event or a film that's getting you very excited. Andy.
Well, I'm really interested in how Spanish cinema has represented the 1970s, because that was such a pivotal era, I think, for the country. So I'm really looking forward to seeing The Cloud Painting Machine, which is set in 1974 in Bilbao. And as I say, it's an area I'm really interested in. So that's one I'm definitely looking forward to.
There's a few things I'm looking forward to, but to help me sort of decide what I'm going to do and when I'm going to see it, I'm really looking forward to the one-hour intro, because it does really give me an idea about what's happening with the film, give me a few themes to think about when I'm watching them, and it really puts the festival into context for me. Also, Los Viajes del Viento, The Wind Journeys, which is the second film by Ciro Guerra. Again, this is another film that is by a director who's previously been at Viva. His film Sombra del Caminante was at my very first Viva, and this one looks stunning from what I've seen. I've had a little check on the internet about it, so I'm really quite excited about that one.
I know as well, quite a lot of our audience are learning Spanish, so you may be a student perhaps at college or an adult learner perhaps at the Cervantes taking courses. Rachel, is this something for you and Viva if you're learning Spanish?
Whew, certainly lots. I'm actually learning Spanish at the moment myself, so I'll be going along to a few of these. So we have a study morning dedicated to people who are learning Spanish in their spare time. So this is around our opening night film, Arráncame la Vida. That's on Saturday, the 19th of March. So for people to go along, watch the film, have an introduction in Spanish, and then most importantly, to discuss the film afterwards. And you also get a little workbook so you can do some exercises. We've also have a long-running series of events that take place in our cafe bar. These are our Cafe Cervantes, which is a Spanish-speaking event, a drop-in session for people to pop along and have a glass of wine and talk about the festival, films they've seen, things they're getting excited about, and so on. And then we also have its companion event, which is the Café El Quatre Gats, pronunciation probably not right there, because this is for speakers and learners of Catalan. And again, people come along, have a bit of a chat, and in Catalan this time. And also for the festival to accompany our exhibition of work from Colombian artist Oscar Munoz, we have a Spanish language discussion session with a little tour of the exhibition, which will be led in Spanish.
You mentioned the cafe there. They'll also have a lovely section of pinchos, which I believe is a Spanish snack served on a stick, not quite the same thing as tapas. And they'll also have a daily Spanish special that's sourced through an authentic supplier. But you just also mentioned the exhibition, Rachel. Tell us a bit more about what's happening in Gallery One. It opens on Friday and it'll be available to view for 3 weeks from Saturday.
I'm really excited to have an exhibition from Oscar Munoz in Gallery One. And Oscar Munoz is perhaps the leading Colombian contemporary artist. In his hometown of Cali, he works with young artists. He very much looks to nurture the contemporary arts in Colombia. His own practice focuses on themes of memory. He looks very much at the impact of conflict on his country and his people, and looks at how things have been forgotten as well as the process of how we remember. And these ideas of memory very much come through in his work. So we see a lot of photographs that have been taken as still photographs that have been manipulated to become fluid. And he uses a lot of delicate and fragile materials in his work. For example, he uses charcoal dust and water to create a sense of fluidity and a sense that things are not fixed, things are not static. So that sort of translates into an idea that the present isn't fixed and static, and neither is the past nor the future.
Gracias, Rachel. And so Viva Festival starts on Saturday the 5th of March and carries on until Sunday the 27th of March. All the films are repeated, so you're going to have time to watch lots of films. If you want to get a pass, you can select up to 8 films in the festival lineup, and that's a bargain, £44, full price, 32 concessions. Now, also something to remember for Viva is that the films don't have all the ads and trailers, so that's a bonus, of course, but you need to get there on time, so the time it says in the brochure, do make your way down for that start time. All the times are on our website and on the Viva website. So the Viva website is www.vivafilmfestival.com, or of course you can look on the Corner House website.
Art, film, books, food, drink, all at Corner House, Manchester.
It's time for our staff recommendation of the week. This week, our workshop leader and usher, Dean Brocklehurst, has kindly stepped up to the challenge, and here's his film pick of the week.
My pick of the week is Howl, which stars James Franco. Howl explores the life of the American poet Allen Ginsberg, who was controversial at the time, and a lot of his works were kind of spoken poetry. But he also brought out a poem which is called Howl, and which the film is based on, which at the time was considered obscene and resulted in the arrest and trial for the publishers, which the film centres around as well. It's quite an experimental film. It mixes animation with black and white image with colours as well. But I think James Franco plays it really well. He does kind of carry the film. The other characters in it are just kind of bit part characters, but he does encapsulate what Allen Ginsberg's essence is. it does generally help if you've got a knowledge of Allen Ginsberg, which I didn't have, so it took me kind of a short while to get into it. So you do have to persevere if you don't previously know the works of Ginsberg. But once you do kind of get the story and the essence, then it's a really enjoyable film. So I definitely recommend this to people that are into art house films. As I say, it is quite experimental and it does take a while to get into. But yeah, it's definitely a good film to watch and yeah, my pick of the week.
Thanks, Dean. Howl is showing here at Corner House all this week and all the times can be found on our website. So thank you for listening to our Oscars and Viva special this week. And of course, thanks to all our guests, Andy, Esther, Rachel and Dean for joining me. For more information about Viva, please go straight to our website, www.cornerhouse.org. Alternatively, why not follow us on Twitter using @cornerhousemcr. Join us on Facebook or check out our blog on Posterous. I'm Sarah Perks. Speak to you again next week.
You've been listening to the Corner House podcast.